it's that same thought of when the yellow masks drop in the aircraft, and the flight attendants tell you, put your mask on first so you can in turn help other people. You've taken a step to help yourself first. And it's not selfish, you have a great heart. It's that you are now in a better position to help other people.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to the ERS Walk and Talk podcast. Today we are featuring for a second time one of the most inspiring people I know, Lieutenant Colonel David Yebra. Colonel Yebra is a graduate of the West Point Military Academy. He retired from the U.S. Army after 23 years of dedicated service to our country, including 3 combat tours to Iraq. He earned 4 Bronze Stars for his service in Iraq. He holds a master's degree in leadership from Long Island University, and he oversees the Training and Leader Development Division, as well as recruitment and retention at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. I've seen Director Yebra speak on many occasions, and over the years I've thought how gifted he is at inspiring and leading people. What I've realized as I listened to him during this interview is that he's actually worked really hard to develop the skills and the specific practices that have helped him to become the leader that he is today. In this podcast, you're going to hear many of Director Yebra's formulas and practices, including visualization and reflection. And he also practices being vulnerable and leaning into uncomfortable situations. And he's going to share with us how we can all do these things as well to become better versions of ourselves. If you're working on improvement in any area of your life, I know that you will take away some valuable insights from this interview. All right, here we go. Director Yebra, thank you so much for being a guest again on the Walk and Talk podcast.
Always a pleasure, Lacey. Thank you for having me.
But we're recording a little bit different now. Last time we were actually out walking. We're on Zoom today, so hopefully that will help our sound quality to be a little bit better. But as always, we're encouraging everybody who's listening to do something physically active as they listen. But if you're just listening while you're driving, that's okay too. So just happy to have folks with us. You led a webinar for us recently for the ERS population, and you were talking about goal setting and envisioning your future. And I know that this is something that you practice on a regular basis yourself, envisioning the future. Where did you first learn about this exercise? Can you talk about how you do this and how it's helped you to become the person you are?
Thank you, Lacey. I was attending a leadership seminar by a great friend, mentor, West Point classmate, Tony Burgess with the Cornwall Leadership Institute. And this was back in 2018, prior to the current job I have as a division director. And he took us through this Envision Future exercise. And it was unique. I actually had to put myself in this current role and spend some time just free flowing ideas of what I believe the future should look like. And I put myself a year out, even without having had the job, I still had to project myself forward a year to think about what it should look like. So we spent deliberate time writing out the envisioned future on a giant piece of butcher paper size type of cardboard and write out that envisioned future. And then underneath that, we would write our current reality. And when you place those alongside each other, the envisioned future and your current reality, what begins to emerge is the action plan to connect you with that envisioned future based on where you currently are. And so it was an experience 2018 prior to taking this job as a division director. And to this very day, I still have that large piece of butcher paper on my desk. And what's really interesting is how close it is to what I'm doing today.
That's awesome. And you can actually see now that that has guided your path at TDCJ in the building out of this division, because the division you lead did not exist prior to you working there, correct?
That's correct. I took on a position with no experience in this agency. My peers had 25 to 30 years experience. I had none in this particular field. And so going through that exercise helped me to see and visualize where I wanted to take this particular division to accomplish the agency's mission.
Do you feel like maybe you've been doing this exercise internally since you were a child? Like, did you see yourself going to West Point Military Academy? Did you see yourself playing soccer? I mean, the things that you've done being a military leader?
Looking back on it, it looks like this great plan. But the difference is the deliberate writing out or drawing what you think it should look like. My experiences at West Point and my experience in soccer, they complete the story, but it was mainly left up to chance and the people that I encountered that had influence in my life. Now it's a little bit more deliberate when you have to write out your envisioned future. Putting that ink to paper has more of a guiding effect than just letting things happen to you and floating down the river, if you will. By taking the time to, in this case, writing it out, you establish a distant aiming point to guide you. It's like the movie Apollo 13. Remember that they had to keep the moon in the little window as they added that little, that whatever they had left of a rocket booster, and keep it going straight. It's the same mindset. Put the moon in your window and put on those rocket boosters. Like, I've had the opportunity to work with a few space shuttle, you know, commanders. And I said, once those rocket boosters are lit, you're going somewhere. You know, so keeping that moon, if you will, in your window is the same kind of description when you lay out your envisioned future. The rocket boosters now are everything that we're dealing with in this environment. Nothing is stable anymore. I don't necessarily like the word change. I like the word adaptability. And I read in General McChrystal's book, Team of Teams, he says adaptability, not efficiency, should be our core competency. But with having an envisioned future or a distant aiming point, it gives that out the adaptability a little bit more direction for the team.
That's great. And when I think about envisioning your future and setting goals, and one of the reasons why I continue to want to talk to you about this is because this is exactly the process that I would go through if I were doing health or wellness coaching with someone. We would sit down and have you really envision what does the future look like and start to embody that so that you can align your behaviors with this vision of yourself in the future. You could use this concept for leadership. You could use it for your health. You could use it for relationships, or really any aspect of your life. And they do sort of all intermingle and collide at one point. James Clear, who wrote the book Atomic Habits, said, "The key to building lasting habits is to focus on identity first. Your current behaviors are a reflection of your current identity. What you do now is a mirror image of the type of person you believe you are, consciously or subconsciously." If someone were coming to you and sort of struggling with not knowing what their identity is and trying to just figure out, how do I create an identity? What would you tell them? Where would you have somebody start?
Really powerful question, as always, Lacey. One of the things that I always revisit in my own mind is the quote that you cannot create what you cannot imagine. So I spent some time in a childlike state, not childish, but childlike, to envision what could be possible, to imagine yourself at some point in the future. You determine the time, but to envision yourself at some point in the future. I work with the baseball team at Sam Houston State University, and the previous coach, Matt Deggs, I think he's at Louisiana Lafayette now, used to share a quote similar to this. It's your willingness to adapt to your environment and to change will drive you. There's no such thing as standing still. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. So to look at your current environment and see where you are at, I mean, that's one thing about your current reality, but you have to be able to project out and say, what do I want to look like at this point in the future? And spending some time reflecting, one, on your experiences and the lessons that you have learned. Experiences can be really valuable, but if left untapped, they go to waste, good or bad. And so you look at your experiences in the past. I literally have written down the mistakes that I have made in combat. 164, as a matter of fact, written in a notebook. And that's after consolidating a few of them. But you go back and look at where you have been in order to shape where you are going to in the future. The other part is to determine, not, you know, people always ask, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years? My thought is more of, who are the people that I need to meet over these next 5 years to get me to where I want to be? And people will often say, well, you got to where you're at because of who you know. But I think a better question is, why should people know you? So you create experiences that will allow you to shape who you are. In some cases, safe to fail experiments to prove or disprove your current capability to become the person that you want to become. That you can identify your own weaknesses. Often we'll say, well, I'm going to wait for somebody to give me feedback. But how often have you really received great feedback about your performance? It's up to you to reflect on those experiences, draw from your lessons learned, and then shape who you want to be in the future. But it takes reflection and journaling or writing down those things that you didn't do very well. And so you can project it forward as to what is it I'm going to do different.
Can you talk a little bit more about your journal of the 164 mistakes?
That emerged, Lacey. The way it would unfold is I would be in these briefings or coming off of operations. And on my notes, I would write a little LL and circle it right next to one of my notes as a lesson learned. And so then at the end of the day or whenever I had a break in the action, I would go back to my notes and identify all those places I wrote a little LL. Then I would take that and reflect on it and sharpen it and then write it down in my book that was my lessons learned. Things that have been done in planning or in actual operations or just reflections about what I had done. So it just started out, I just said, you know, I really said, don't do that again. And I wrote the little LL and then circled it. And so that just caught on. So throughout the remainder of my time, when I would go back to my notes, I would just look for the little LL and then, you know, take some time, rewrite it. And that was in itself crystallizing the perspective or the lesson that I had to learn by having to look, rewrite it, think about it, and document it. And then most importantly, go back and look at them every once in a while. It just gives you a process for mistakes that you make. I listened to General McChrystal in a TED Talk, and he said, the mark of a good leader is it will allow their people to fail, but not let them feel like a failure. And if your mistakes have nowhere to go, then it just results in failure. But if you fail, you reflect on it, and it becomes a lesson learned, then it becomes action. And it has a positive forward-thinking effect as opposed to I just failed and nobody processes that experience, good or bad.
That makes a lot of sense. So you're doing quite a bit of reflecting backwards, looking into the past and envisioning a future. It's kind of this two-way street, if you will, toward in all of that sort of culminating in a journaling experience that can help you to really think about what type of person you want to be, whether it's leadership, health, or like I said, relationships and all the dimensions of our life. When you think about the struggles, and I love what you just said about the quote from General McChrystal, there's often a lot of shame wrapped up in mistakes that we make. And a lot of times I think people are scared to admit that they have made mistakes because of fear of getting in trouble or being seen as weak or whatever other reason culturally that we've been raised with that you should never mess up. Do you deal with any of that personally? Do you ever struggle with when you have made a mistake, sort of owning it and talking about it?
I do. It's with the most important part for me is to have a solid support team in place to help me process and see myself. I mean, they're called blind spots for a reason because you can't see them. And we have a group of guys that include Tony Burgess, Rob Campbell from Rob Campbell Leadership, and we call them jam sessions. And there's no agenda. We just set the time, and then inevitably somebody will say, what's going on? And then it'll open up, and we'll be able to process and talk about what we didn't do very well, offer each other some really candid and you know feedback about the way we are thinking about certain things, but then deliberate meetings with mentors and relationships that help you, one, realize you're not alone in this fight. Two, that when it comes to leading people, including ourselves, that it's a team sport, that relying on other people is okay. And no matter what, you're going to come out better as a result of building your support team. You know, identify your needs and then build that support team to meet your particular needs. You don't drive your car to the mechanic and say, fix my car. They're going to say, well, what noise is it making? When people often ask, well, what book should I read? Or I'll say, what noise is your engine making? Then I can tell you maybe what book or maybe I can recommend somebody that would be a great mentor for you to help you understand what it is that you're going through for strength, for support. There's something healthy about being vulnerable, and the power of inquiry, of asking questions, is a really powerful leadership trait, to ask really insightful questions. And one of the quotes that shared with me is, if you never ask the question, the answer has nowhere to go. Being vulnerable, you ask questions about how might I best handle this situation, or this is what I did, how might I do it better next time? So building a good support team, to realize you're not alone, and that team consists of team members that will help you meet specific needs that you are having.
One of the things I've noticed as a leader is that you do a lot of giving it back and appreciating people around you. I've seen you deliver presentations, and it's so authentic. It really comes from your heart when you appreciate the people that work for you. That's an art. I feel like it's something that I know you truly appreciate people, but you're able to so authentically show that. Is that something that you've always been able to do, or is that a learned skill or something that you can kind of expand upon?
Well, thank you very much for the comment, first of all. It is thousands of hours of practice. There's a few phrases that run through my mind that help me. And some of it is when you think about how you think, is to imagine that no matter what you do, it's going to be positive. If you share your heart with somebody, and if you are truly wanting to help other people, that it's going to turn out well. You have to believe in your whole heart that you are there for them. It seems subtle. Before any session, you know, I tell myself two things. I mean, one is never have a bad day. And you need to block out everything else that is going on and deliver to the best of your ability with them by showing them your heart, your passion, and your intensity. The second is just truly imagine that no matter what you do, it's going to be good. And then that begins to track your mind in a very positive way. A smile or a positive attitude or your humor sets a wonderful condition for the human brain and ensuring that they're ready to listen to you. So in some cases, Lacey, I'll summarize it. One is, I'll do deliberate things to get people ready to listen to me, whether it's a meditation experience, reflection, breathing exercise, so they are ready to listen. We check in to be ready and prepared, just like stretching before exercising. And so you warm them up in that regard. When it comes to humor and other things, I remember the time that I started to practice humor in military briefings. And I remember practicing certain elements of who I would be in the delivery of influence strategies. Fortunately and unfortunately, you know, you see some things in combat and you take account of the people who can't be present with you and what they wouldn't do to have your bad day. And so you work your mind in a way to be able to see. In a book, Your Brain at Work, it talks about you have a little director that can clear your stage. Your brain can only handle so many things at one time. So you, and the cool thing is this little director will work. You clear your brain, just like that meditation exercise. That's your director getting everybody off the stage. And so that what you need to focus on is the only thing on that stage. And so in dealing with other people and projecting inspiration and trying to influence them, it's really important that my mind is clear. So it's a lot of practice, Lacey, a lot of mistakes. I can tell you, I remember vividly the times where I didn't do very well, a lot more than I do the times where it went well. I get the chills thinking about the times where I just really blew it. I didn't do very well. And I can tell you specifically where they were, and I can tell you exactly what happened, much more so than I can when the things went well.
I know that we normally do remember the things that went wrong, but you also have shared with me some stories of some things that have gone really well, including the story of the student that you helped at Sam Houston State University. Would you mind sharing a little bit about that story?
I've shared a story with you before, Lacey, about that young student that wasn't feeling well and felt that ending their life might be the best course of action, and how an envisioned future exercise opened up their minds that it could be possible, that they're the ones in control. And that student actually wrote me a note, and in there he said to never have a, quote, bad day, end quote. And he wrote that back to me. I didn't know I was going to have that impact on him, but envisioning his future, getting a sense of who he was and what he could do, and the idea of never having a bad day, it just resonated with him. I didn't know all that in advance. So the other part is you just never know.
You never know how your words are going to positively impact or negatively impact another human's life. Would you mind if, do you have that? Do you want to read a little bit of that letter or?
Not at all, Lacey, not at all. And I'll just set the stage. This is a group of honors college students that I shared a perspective with. And part of it had to deal with envisioning your future. And we don't reach our goals, not because of resistance, but we settle for a lesser goal. Email reads, "Hello, Mr. Yebra. My name is the student, and I'm in the honors seminar class you talked to at the beginning of the semester. I wanted to reach out to let you know that I really appreciate the talk you gave us. Earlier this year, I felt very unhappy with my life. I was depressed and even had a suicide attempt. I got a little better thanks to my roommates, but what really helped me get my mental health on track and feel happy again was your seminar. It helped me realize that if I want to be happy, I have to take control of my own mind and learn to think in a positive manner and not dwell on negativity. That realization that I had, thanks to your talk, has completely changed my life for the better. I'm now thankful for every day that I wake up. I feel like I never have a, quote, bad day. So again, I want to thank you, Colonel Yebra, and I hope you are able to continue your great work with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and NALSRA, because I'm sure you inspire many people."
That's beautiful. And often I think you help people and you never get that letter, but you never know how your words are impacting people and how powerful that envisioning the future exercise is when we actually sit down and reflect and think about where do we want to be looking forward.
I think just deliberately going through that process of thinking through what could be and seeing past limitations that we impose on ourselves. There's a brief exercise that I did during the webinar as well that just demonstrates how we impose limitations on ourselves without even being told that you can't do something. And to determine really what the truth is, not in the lying or about what is true about what I can and cannot do, and aligning safe to fail type experiments as if you were conducting research to see if indeed what you believe is true about what you can and cannot accomplish. It's just an exercise that I run. It's just really interesting. I would say 96% of the people that go through this exercise with me impose a limitation on themselves in the accomplishment of a particular task that they are assigned that I never said. They just assumed.
I did. I know I did.
So. You experienced it, Lacey, firsthand.
I was totally one of those people. Yeah.
Why? If you do that with us, if you apply limitations to yourself with a very simple exercise like that, what do you do in your day-to-day life? And most of the time, you're probably not even thinking about it. You just believe it can't be done. It's like fitness. People use age as a reason why not to do something. They believe that if I do that, I'm going to get hurt. And your body can handle quite a bit, but we impose limitations. In this case, for fitness, the age becomes a limitation. So therefore, I can't. Nobody ever uses their age as to what they can do. They use it as a reason why not to do something. It's just interesting to see about limitations. And what is truth? What is the truth about what you can and cannot do? Line of thought, if you think about how you are thinking and your brain at work, you know, sheds a lot of light as to how you actually think about things. And then you read books like David Goggins, "Can't Hurt Me," what the power of the mind can do to turn your perspective on what you can and cannot do and what your body is capable of doing. But we assume that we can't do certain things, and those limitations suffocate our ability to accomplish what we want to accomplish.
There's so many questions I have for you and so many topics that I would like to cover. And I feel very blessed that we have you as a part of the state's workforce and that you're going to continue to provide webinars for us throughout the year. And so I hope you'll be a regular podcast guest and that we can continue to sort of explore some of these topics. I think also I'd really like to hear your thoughts on workplace culture and what do we do around, you know, helping to build a workplace culture. And those are all concepts that I would love to get into as we move forward into the rest of 2022. Do you have any closing thoughts for the folks out there that are listeners to the Walk and Talk podcast?
Well, first of all, you're out doing something that is going to help you. So congratulations for getting out the door. You've already done something that begins to set a path for you to accomplish what you want to accomplish. When I would work with the Sam Houston State University football team, I would say, you know, being a good football player is temporary. Learning to be great is forever. So if you're out walking and listening right now, something, some formula got you out the door. That same template you can apply to other aspects of your life, other aspects of work. You prioritized yourself. It's that same thought of when the yellow mask dropped in the aircraft and the flight attendants tell you, put your mask on first so you can in turn help other people. You've taken a step to help yourself first. And it's not selfish. If you have a great heart, it's that you are now in a better position to help other people. And so just because you got out the door and are doing that at this very moment, that same template you can apply to other aspects of your life and goals that you want to accomplish.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, Director Yebra. Thank you for your leadership and your mentorship and your stories. You're always so inspiring. And I know we all appreciate you and look forward to future podcasts.
A real pleasure, Lacey. And again, most of it is because of mistakes that I have made, learning from those mistakes, and then turning it into action, reflection, and learning from those experiences. Most of our experiences go to waste because we don't process them, and we have to relearn a lot of those mistakes. And so I appreciate the opportunity to share some of my own lessons learned and how I've shaped my influence strategies.
Thank you so much for tuning in today and for listening to this episode of our Walk and Talk podcast. If you would like to listen to the webinar on envisioning your future with David Yebra that we offered in January that we continued to reference during the podcast, I did put the link to that in our show notes. And if you have a story to share or someone that you think we should feature on the podcast, please reach out to me. I'm always looking for guests that can help to inspire other people to keep moving and to work on health and wellness. My contact information is in the show notes. Thank you for being a part of this community. And remember, just like Director Yebra said, never have a bad day. All right, take care, everyone.